Hello and welcome to the Philosopher's Zone. I'm Alan Saunders. This week we turn to the philosophy of history. What exactly is it that historians do? Well, what they appear to be doing is writing books with the past as their subject. But you could also say that what they're doing is writing about, drawing conclusions from, all sorts of documents, records, letters, treaties, chronicles, whatever, and that these documents exist, and they have to exist if they're going to be of any use to us, in the present. So are historians reconstructing the past out of this evidence, or are they in fact constructing it? To talk about this, I'm delighted to be joined now by somebody who over the last 30 years or so has made a very significant contribution to debates on this subject. He's Hayden White, University Professor Emeritus of the History of Consciousness at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and he was invited to this country for the 20th International Congress of Historical Sciences, held at the University of New South Wales. Hayden White, welcome to the Philosopher's Zone.
Thank you, Alan.
Now, you have said that the past is not reconstructed, it's constructed. Why is that?
Well, this has to do with the nature of the historian's object of study. It's no longer open to perception. It's accessible only by way of documents, fragments, monuments, and so forth that continue in the present. Not all interest in the past is historical. Every culture has an interest in the past, but only Western culture has developed a specifically historical approach to the study of the past. And this has to do with the fact that only in the West does the gap between past and present pose a problem that seems to require special discipline.
So although we sometimes use the words past and history as though they were synonymous, in fact, I slipped into doing it in my introduction, they're not at all the same.
No, not at all. In fact, the past of the archaeologist is quite different from the past of the historian, since archaeology is primarily based upon the reconstruction of the past through material objects. Modern scientific conceptions of history try to deprive it of its original interest in the present, try to study the past for itself alone. I don't think this is possible. I don't know what that would mean, since the kinds of questions you ask of the past always have to do with some immediate existential interest of a society in the present.
Well, yes, various historians, particularly certainly in the 19th century, have tried to think of themselves as scientific when science emerges as the sort of dominant discourse. Now, I suppose that might just mean that they want to be rigorous in their use of data, and they associate this rigor with science, but the claim being made is rather broader than that, isn't it?
Well, you're quite right, Alan. We have different notions of what scientificity consists of. You say maybe they just want to be rigorous. They also want to avoid all transcendental or quasi-religious or mythical conceptualizations of the data, which means that they cannot invoke anything divine or godlike or spiritual as a causal force. But rigor and scientificity are associated largely in the continental European tradition with notions like experimental controls, ability to predict, and provision of causal explanations. And historians can't provide that, never have been able to do so due to the nature of their materials, which are, by definition, no longer open to perception. I want to stress, though, that I believe, and a large number of sociologists of knowledge believe, that modern Western conceptions of history are functions or products of peculiarly Western forms of social development, modernism, modernization, scientificity, Protestantism, perhaps, and certainly capitalism. So that Lévi-Strauss, the great French anthropologist, could say history is the myth of the West. In getting rid of myth and creating history, modern historiographers, historians, tend to create ideal constructions, usually of their own national pasts, in the form of heroism, patriotism, things of that sort, that really are kind of mythical in nature.
But if we think about what historians, very many of them, tend to think of themselves as doing, the more sort of roll up the sleeves and get on with the job kind of historian tends to think that, well, what I'm doing is I'm discovering the facts through the documentation, I'm marshalling my thoughts about the facts, and then I'm writing about them. This is all there is to it.
Well, that's a kind of a craftsman notion of historical research. You go into the archives to see what's there. You perhaps form a few hypotheses and check them out. And you bring back what I call an archival report. But the social function of history writing, it always tends towards the creation of a national normative narrative. Even if one is writing, say, an American friend of mine, an American historian of Japan. Why is he writing the history of Japan? What does he go there for? He was primarily driven there by the fact that we had this war with Japan and that we developed certain kinds of relationships with Japan after the Second World War that lead him to ask specific kinds of questions. Is democracy possible in Japan, given his cultural background, his cultural heritage? What kind of relationship is imperial worship to the possibility of a liberalization and so forth? These are the kind of questions he raises. These are usually questions that historians ask of the more recent past rather than the remote past. Study the remote past, you can't, Egypt, ancient Egypt, you can't say that there's some kind of political fallout that will derive from your study of that.
Although I suppose even with ancient Egypt, I mean, if you're an Egyptian, you could be approaching the subject saying this is part of our glorious national heritage. And if you're an Egyptian Muslim fundamentalist, you could say this is exactly the sort of ancient superstition which the Holy Quran has enabled us to overcome.
Yes, that's quite right. You raise a very interesting point about the way in which historians are complicit in the creation of an illusion of continuity. They create these things, these illusions, which are mythical, of continuity between the people of Egypt today and the people of Egypt in the second millennium BC. Then these become the bases for motivating political movements, movements of liberation, movements of imperial expansion, and so forth. The point is that these illusions of continuity are constructions, and so are all illusions of continuity, because societies are not related in the way individuals are by genetic affiliation. They're related by all kinds of contingent circumstances, including the fact that modern Greece is primarily a Slavic people, not a Hellenic people. And you have a big debate today about whether modern Greece is the heir of ancient Greece, and this leads to the debate over the Elgin Marbles, you know.
If history is essentially narrative, it's stories, is the narrative imposed on the evidence or drawn from it?
Well, it's a big debate. Contemporary philosophers are working it over. But you see, modern social scientific historiography or historical writing doesn't aspire necessarily to the telling of a story. They're aspiring to analysis of, say, class conflict and things of that sort, which doesn't necessarily add up to a narrative.
But there are historians, I mean, one who springs to mind who is methodologically quite sophisticated, Simon Sharma, for example, has done a book on Dutch culture in the 17th century, which is a sort of social science exercise, but he's also done narrative.
Yes, that's right. Many historians do both. This brings me to, I think, an important technical point that many of your audience may not find particularly interesting, but it has to do with the difference between what the philosopher Michael Oakeshott calls the practical past as against the historical past. The practical past is the past we all carry around with us every day. It's your conception of history. It's, you know, 1066 and all that. It's what you can remember. And when you have to, as a politician may have to do, make a case for such a thing as invading Iraq by summoning up some kind of historical destiny, then they're invoking what we would call the practical past. It's the past that's whatever you need to come to terms with your present. Whereas the historical past tends to be what you call roll up your sleeves and get on with the job kind of history. Really, what happened in the past without asking too much what its relationship is to practical problems in the present. The interesting thing about that is that scientific history has no payoff, utilitarian or otherwise. Hegel said, the great philosopher Hegel, said the only thing you ever learn from the study of history is that nobody ever learns anything from the study of history.
Well, yes, just to close on the subject of the practical past, there has been much debate in this country recently about what our Prime Minister has described as the black armband view of history. And this essentially is the view of Australian history as being tragic, and the protagonists of the tragedy being the Aboriginal people. But what has become of that is that historians have debated the question of how many Aborigines were massacred in a particular place at a particular time. They've been arguing about the numbers. I presume that there is an objective truth here, even if we can't arrive at it. I mean, we have to insist that there were a particular number of people who might have been killed at a particular place. We can't play fast and loose with the evidence.
Well, that's quite true, but as we've discovered in Holocaust studies, that number varies, as you know. But that is really not the important point. The important point is, what does the Holocaust mean for us today in our attempts to construct a national identity? These are ethical issues. This is why I think that the attempt to turn history into a scientific discipline misses the point of the function of history since its invention by the Greeks. I mean, once metaphysics goes out the window, as it has with modern science, what do you have left? Well, you have the data of your group's own experience of the world. And it's those experiences that ask for ethical or moral evaluation. Cynthia Udzik points out that it's not a matter of the numbers at Auschwitz. It's a matter of what was carried out there, to what end or purpose, and what does this tell us about the people who did it? And I think that's the real issue. We have the same argument that you have about your Aborigines with our Aborigines, the American Indians. And the issues there have to do with what we conceive to be the nature of the origin of our community. Is it conceived in sin or not, you see? Because if it is conceived in sin, then to appeal to the origins as some criterion of purity on the basis of which you can then legislate, then you've got a problem, you see?
Well, Hayden White, thank you very much for illuminating some of these problems for us.
Thank you very much, Alan, for inviting me.
I'm Alan Saunders, and I'll be back next week with another Philosopher's Zone. Coming up next on Radio National, an event which is always of world historical significance, another Occam's Razor, presented by Robin Williams.